Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And Alex, are you currently residing inside of a room?
I'm always in a room.
Is there any loot?
The earth is a room, Nathan.
And children are our future, but did you know that there might be loot in your room?
Yes.
That's the best segue I have, Alex, because right now we are very...
40 minutes in, that's the best segue Nathan's got.
Yep, that's pretty much it. We are very happy to have back on the show Chris Bissett from Loot the Room. Chris, thank you for being on.
You are very welcome.
Yes. I love the dulcet tones that you're bringing
it's
in.
It's almost like he's been here the whole time.
It does feel that way.
The calls were coming from inside the podcast.
Yeah, you know, pretty much, yeah. Chris, I got a question for you.
Cool.
How important are layouts to maps?
Oh, man, we went from 40 minutes of fucking about
to maps? No, we're not talking about layout. We're not talking about layouts of maps, layout. Nathan.
Okay, fine.
I mean, okay. It helps to have a map.
Yes,
maps are laid out. That is how important that is, Nathan.
That's very fair.
We're not talking about layouts of maps, though.
Why don't you tell us what we're talking about, Alex?
We're talking about layouts of rule books and books and that stuff.
Oh, okay. See, this conversation makes a lot more sense to me now.
Yeah, this is where you've been lost for 40 minutes in recording, and now you're just getting it.
I've been lost for longer than that, my friend. I've been lost for about 4 years. Okay, layouts of manuals. I got that right?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. We'll call it right so we don't have to split hairs.
Okay, great. So, recently, Chris, you had written a thing about layouts.
I had. I write lots of stuff about layouts because I like layout stuff. And well, I don't know if I like layout. I have thoughts about layout. And I have a big enough ego that I think other people should be subjected to my thoughts.
That's
you know what?
Fair.
That's probably why you're on the show.
It is. You're giving me a platform to kind of decimate my ego amongst the masses.
I imagine in your time, having written supplements, having done all that work, you've seen your fair share of layouts that did not necessarily lend themselves to accessibility for the normal player.
Oh, I've created my fair share of layouts.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yes, to answer your question, yes.
So, I mean, we can even go over some of what you had written about it, but what are some of the common mistakes that you see people make in layout?
Do you know what? I don't necessarily see mistakes because there's two categories of people making supplements. There's the big pros doing it who have got their layout down. Mm-hmm. And there's the people, you know, like me and who started out like me who haven't got a clue what they're doing, unfortunately. Like I still don't know what I'm doing half the time. So people kind of put stuff together and go, it looks okay. We'll throw it on wherever. Just some of the stuff you see, you just think, did you look at this before you put it up? You know, you probably want examples, don't you?
Without naming names, yeah.
Can I get through this whole episode without ever actually making a point?
Yes. So far, so good.
That would be a bad layout, though, for the show.
That would be. My big thing at the minute, because I did, last time we were on, we talked about Bulletstorm, which was the adventure I did, where I decided that basically, all my design decisions are based around how I use things. I don't really talk to people, and I don't really, you know, I don't do market research or anything like that because I'm ignorant and I'm more important than everyone else. Like, I get a lot of PDFs, you know, DriveThruRPG and DMs Guild stuff, and I don't ever print them out. And my only computer is a really shitty old Acer laptop with a really tiny screen. And when I'm trying to use, like, a new monster manual or something, I'm endlessly scrolling with my little trackpad that doesn't support multi-touch. So I have to hold down my key and scroll, and I hate it. So last time I was on, I just released Bulletstorm, which I formatted for screens and kind of made it all fancy interactive PDF. So you could just run it off a, you know, landscape oriented monitor. And that was my big thing last year that I was obsessed with. And I've kind of moved on from that now. Now I'm obsessed with reinventing the wheel again and kind of redesigning monster manuals from the ground up. Yeah, that's what I'm interested in at the moment.
So what do you see as an issue with monster manuals currently that makes you want to redesign them?
So it's kind of the same thing that issue I had with general layout, in that it hasn't really evolved since, you know, 1976. Some things have changed, but nothing massive. Like, even little things like having to turn pages rather than having a monster on its own page, which 4th edition did beautifully, because there was no fluff to go with the monsters. It was just pure stats, so they fit on a page really nicely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, you know, you've got page breaks in the middle of a monster and you have to flick backwards and forwards. And, you know, monster manuals are always arranged alphabetically, which makes sense. It's a pretty universal way of arranging things.
It's how encyclopedias work.
Exactly. And occasionally you'll get, well, more than occasionally, quite often you get a list of monsters by challenge rating in the back of the book, or monsters by terrain.
Which 5e did not do.
5e did not do, and you can download it, but, you know, put it in the damn book. I think there's a list of monsters by challenge rating back of the Dungeon Master's Guide for 5e.
Yeah, but then you have to cross-reference that. Yeah.
Like, why did you put that in a different book?
Like, if you're going to have that in the DMG, put it in there with page numbers.
Yeah, that would
so
help.
That I know exactly where to look if exactly. I have to cross-reference. So, I don't have to take another book and then look through it.
Exactly. So this is my thing at the moment. Let me ask you a question. Let's say you're building an encounter.
I am building all sorts of encounters.
Cool.
Right in my head.
So you're
right
building
now.
An encounter, and you're building a swamp encounter, right? And you know that you don't want to use hags or shambling mounds, right?
I want to use trolls, like 50 of them.
No,
I
you
want
can't
use scrags.
You can't use trolls or scrags either. You want to use a monster that you've never heard of before. You're like, I want to use a new monster that's new to me and new to my players, and it needs to be challenge rating 8. Find me that monster in the monster manual.
Done.
Oh.
I don't know. It's a Umber Hulk that's come up from the Underdark.
God damn you.
I don't know if that's a CR8 or not, but I could look it up right now. No love for the Umber Hulks?
No, I do love Umber Hulk.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to put like a little addendum on that. It also has to be fun at parties. Go, Alex.
What's wrong with the Umber Hulk?
You can put a party hat on it. I don't think it's going to work too well. You know,
I've got visions of an Umber Hulk popping out of the ground with a little paper party hat on and one of those things.
Oh, Umber Hulk is only CR5. I'm looking at it right now.
Then this little segue was pointless. Okay. Okay.
So my point was, it's really hard. If you don't know exactly what monster you want, it's really hard to find it in a monster manual, especially if, like, say you're new to the system. You've never played D&D before, and you pick up a monster manual. You're like, this is a list of names that mean nothing to me.
Yeah, that would be me. I really wouldn't mean anything.
Exactly. I've been publishing monsters and things recently with adventures and things like that, and I've been formatting them all for screens again. So what I've been doing is I've been trying to fit them all on one page for starters. I understand why that isn't the standard in 5th edition, because that's hard. Mm-hmm. But I've made these tiny little changes where in the top corner of the page, say, I've put in little circles with color-coded ones what challenge rating the monster is, a little icon that tells you what terrain it is, and an icon that tells you what type the monster is. So you can literally pick up a book and just flick through the corners, you know, like riffle through the corners, and you can see all this information, and you can go, swamp monster, I'm going to open it to that page, and bam, we have a monster I can use now. And I don't understand why it's taken 40 years for me to come along and say, let's do this.
Now, are you grouping these together by numbers or colors as you do this?
I will probably arrange them alphabetically generally in a printed book, because, like, you know, the alphabet has been around for as long as human language has been around.
Maybe. It's been around. It's a tested thing that works.
It's a tried and tested method. So, you know, I want to know roughly in the book without thinking about it where you is likely to be. I don't want to be finding an Umber Hulk on page 4. That makes no sense.
I mean, part of me thinking as you say this goes, you could group it by alphabetical by terrain type.
You totally could.
If you wanted to.
Yeah, you absolutely
It would be going an extra step to do
I
it.
I think the problem I have with that is it's not intuitive. If I pick up a book of monsters, my immediate thought is these are probably in alphabetical order. And if I then see that they've also got this really quick reference, oh, I can see what type they are. I'm like, oh, cool, I know how to use this book. If I pick it up and it seems like bits of it are in alphabetical order, but then it goes back to A again and it'll take a second to go, oh, shit, these are all swamp monsters. And then do you put the terrain in alphabetical order as well?
Yes.
So basically, it's like, how would I organize it and then have to try and reorganize it afterward? Is that going to ruin the first organizational technique that I used that was trying to fix it in the first place?
I've kind of shared this with people and I've shared it on Twitter, and nobody has immediately come and said, well, yeah, you know, World of Darkness was doing this back in 96 or whatever. Even if it's not a completely new idea that no one's done before, it's the kind of thing that I want to see in RPGs, so I'm going to make it happen.
Be the change you wish to see in the RPG world.
Somebody else can be the change that I want to see in the rest of the world. I haven't got time for that.
Yeah, we're just thinking a little smaller. We're thinking locally.
Like, know your limitations, right?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So my thing with Monster Manuals has been not one of layout per se, but why, for instance, in the same vein, when you say there's fluff in the book, and there is, mm-hmm. why not group... Like, say you have how many different variants of dragons?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have how many different variants based on how old the dragon is?
Yeah.
Why don't you list all the variants of dragon under one thing? Mm-hmm. Why don't you list the variants of giants under one list? You go giant, and you can have an entry for frost giant, hill giant, fire giant.
Which, I think 5th edition did that, didn't it? Like, there's a whole section of devils, there's a whole section of demons.
They're in a section, but they're... on multiple pages.
That's true. Oh, you mean like just have like a table at the beginning saying these are all the different types? Or something like
you
that.
Can do a stat block and then do another stat block and another stat block.
Oh, totally. Leah, like Volo's Guide to Monsters sort of did that. Like it took all the fluff and put it in the first half of the book. And then the second half of the book is pure crunch. So you've got like a chapter on beholders and beholder kin. And you've got a chapter on, I don't know, hags. And then in the next section of the book, you've got, I think, I might be misremembering, it's been a while since I looked at that book, but I'm fairly sure that the fluff is separate from the crunch.
I mean, you really don't need fluff with a monster entry unless it's imperative to it. You can get the stat block, then you can have a footnote about the environment, their nature, and any special abilities. Like, you don't need to have a giant fluff, like, telling you, like, what a warg is. I assume people know what a warg is now.
Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, you've got to account for people who are new to the hobby.
That's true.
Obviously.
That's true.
This is part of what I wrote a couple of quite lengthy articles about this back in January, which I don't know if they're worth reading because I don't reread my work.
eyes front, never back.
Exactly. But one of the things that I got me thinking is, to my mind, there are three distinct kind of use cases for a monster manual, which all have their own sub cases, but there's using it to kind of sit and read and learn about monsters and maybe find a new cool monster. There's using it at the table where you just want a quick reference. Sitting and reading includes building an adventure, you know, when you've got time to kill and you're flicking through the book. There's using it at the table as a quick reference to tell you exactly what the monster does. And for me, there's looking at the art and just being like, holy shit, these things are really cool. So what I want to do eventually, and this, you said if I got anything coming up that I want to talk about, this is coming up, but this is like in a year's time maybe, is I want to publish a bestiary, but I want to format it and print it as a table, like a coffee table art book. So I want a big landscape book, probably hardback. And when you open it up, on one page, there will be the stats and the information about the monster. And on the page next to that will be a really beautiful illustration of that monster eating a baby or something. You know?
It's a dingo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to have dingoes and drop bears in my monster manual. And in fact, I'm going to create an RPG called Dingoes and Drop Bears, and I'm proud to be able to announce that on the Delve podcast.
There you go. Yeah.
You've heard it here first. Dingoes and Drop Bears coming soon to an Australian-hating bookstore near you.
Well, I mean, I've never been to Australia, so I'm just going to base it all on that famous documentary, Mad Max.
Oh, yes. That was a good
one. Yeah, that documentary good... about...
Well, I mean, you're in England, right?
I am.
You're safe to assume anything you want about Australia because you left them there.
We apologize to our Australian listeners.
The only one who's going to comment on this is going to be Morgan. We'll hear Morgan Jenkins, and he'll be like, what the hell is wrong with you guys? Because he's in Australia.
I think Phil Beckwith will have something to say about this as well.
Oh, good. As long as somebody says something about it, I don't care.
Yeah, any press is good press. Right?
Chris, are you familiar with 40K at all?
Well, I'm familiar with 40K to the extent that I know that Event Horizon is basically a 40K film.
Oh, okay. The only real segue here is the fact that there's death worlds in 40K. They are worlds that are deadly to be on, as per the name death world. Everything there tries to kill you. Australia is a death world.
Yeah.
And in space, death worlds are Space Australia. And the American version of this is Florida.
Oh, yeah. I've heard tales of Florida. But I've heard
there's more crocodiles than people.
Yeah, we know about crocodiles. We know about Florida Man over here as well.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to avoid.
So my thoughts are going back to the actual point of this is what if you do the stat block page, the information page, but you have it overlaid on top of like a sketch?
That'd be cool, like an anatomical diagram.
Doesn't even have to be that, but like you could have sketches underneath the actual thing. So it's an overlay or an underlay.
That could be cool. I mean, this is all liable to change because everything I do changes depending on my whims at the time. With Bulletstorm and stuff, I did quite, you know, like traditional fancy like parchment backgrounds and banners, and this is an RPG product. Look at it, it looks like an RPG product. I'm just lazy. I didn't like the way it looked and I couldn't be bothered to redesign it. So all my layout recently has been minimalist to the point of starkness, text on a white page with a bit of a border and some drop shadows to separate things. And I'm quite happy with how it looks. It's maybe going a bit too far into minimalism. I'm not sure. I'm still working that out.
Some people really like minimalism.
They do. And I'm one of them. Apparently, I didn't know that I was one of them. I learned this during this process. Apparently, I quite like minimalism.
I don't know. I kind of like the idea of seeing D&D monsters laid out like Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. You know, like kind of like in the. Yeah.
Did you play third edition?
No, he didn't. I haven't played like anything.
Oh yeah, you haven't played anything. But the third edition rule books had this really gorgeous like pencil sketched artwork in them, and it was very reminiscent of that, and I love the art in those books.
Yeah.
At the time, I remember thinking that the layout looked really cool, nice as well. But going back to them, it's hideous.
Right.
Well, the 3.5 books too, right?
3.5 books. Yeah, they are. They're an improvement on.
They're not terrible to look at. They're still decent and they hold up well, but they've done better.
Yeah, if you compare them to second edition, they're leagues apart. And obviously,
I didn't thankfully look at second.
Yeah, I mean, I started playing in second, and you know, it was just that was what D&D looked like, and I didn't even think about it. But I've been going, like I said, I've been going back reading through old issues of Dragon magazine recently from like 76 and 77. The layout in those things is atrocious. You've got an article starts and then it'll say, it'll be on page 2 and then it'll say, it'll break halfway through a sentence like in a newspaper and say continued on page 23.
Why don't we lay out a book like a choose your own adventure book?
I don't know if you know this, my master's is in creative writing, innovation and experiment. And
I didn't even know you had your master's, so yeah, that is news to me.
Very nice,
congrats.
Yes.
Thank you. That's where a lot of this design kind of fetish has come from, because I really got involved in doing a lot of weird layout things because I kind of got bored with my master's and wanted to have fun with it. And one of the essays assignments that I submitted was in the form of a choose your own adventure, and I called it choose your own essay. And I even had an instant death paragraph in it where the assessor got to it and it said, "You have died. Go back to the start of this essay and begin again."
Oh,
it was really super fun to write. I forgot about that until just now.
What was your grade on that?
I smashed it. I got very lucky with the guy marking it because it turns out he's an old school gamer and he had a huge collection of Choose Your Own Adventure books, which I didn't learn until I got the mark back. And I got something like a 97 out of 100 on that essay.
Nice.
And he's like, "I loved that."
Yeah. He said in his comments that he went back and read it 3 or 4 times to get all the possible endings because I had multiple different conclusions to the essay in it. And at one point I had it get stuck in an infinite loop. It was really fun, and that was really easy to write as well, because I just wrote it had to be like 10,000 words, so I just wrote like 10 or 15 small like vignettes of an essay, like little bits that if I put them into an essay in kind of coherent form would have seemed really all over the place.
Right. But in the form of Choose Your Own Adventure, it was totally...
Yeah, totally. It wasn't a very well-written essay at all. Just putting it into that format just made it work. It was,
but it was creative writing that you were doing, so it fit.
Yeah, and innovation and experiment. So they looked at it and just got a massive like innovation boner for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Nathan's confused.
I'm not going to go there. That's a whole that's a whole other kind of role-playing game. Alex, we know everything now, right?
We know so many things that we did not know before.
Oh, yeah. We know all the things. And
be afraid of the things that you don't know that you don't know.
Mostly don't panic.
And always have your towel with you.
Always
have your towel. Alex, if anyone would be interested in finding out more about Delve, where could they go?
Honestly, at this point, I don't know why anyone would after this episode. But if you want to find out more about Delve, you can find us at delvecast.com.
The funny thing is, people are going to listen to this episode. They're not going to understand all the stuff that got edited out, because I'm sorry, folks. I don't think you actually want to know most of what we edited this episode.
I mean, if you really want... to listen to this entire episode unedited, let us know. And not post it anywhere, but
I might send it to you.
We might be willing to send you the file.
You don't want to listen to it.
No. That is just a general statement. You probably don't want to listen.
Not safe for work warning.
Not safe for home.
Not safe for life.
Not safe for human consumption.
No.
If you listen to this episode in its entirety unedited, you will die in 7 days.
The FDA will not approve this episode.
My God, we derailed the outro.
We derailed the outro.
Always derail.
Damn it!
We're keeping it, so it's fine.
It's good. We're good. It's the best part of the episode. It's the end. Oh my god!
It's over. The best part is the.
Chris, if people wanted to find out more about all of the articles that you're writing, all the maps, where could they go?
They could go to hell. No, they could go to
yes.
You could
go to hell.
They could go to theroom.uk or grab me on Twitter. Not physically grab me. I don't like being touched. On Twitter at Pangalactic.
Where all the gargle blasters are sold.
All of the gargles are blasted.
Yeah, perfect.
That sounds like a particularly fun episode title.
Yeah, all the gargles gargle are blasting. Blasted.
No, yeah. Gargle Blasting 101.
Oh, nice. That's good. We have so many we have so many titles for this episode.
I mean, yeah, if
not another clickbait.
not another clickbait, yeah.
Call it Skip This Episode.
You know that people are going to want to listen to it extra hard.
Skip this track.
Yeah, skip
it. It'll be like the MSI song Bomb This Track.
Yeah, or Steal This Album.
Yep. Yes, it'll be Steal This Album.
Yep, absolutely.
You mean it'll be the one that nobody listens to?
Yeah. Yet. It'll be great. I'm going to look in and be like, so we actually had people unsubscribe.
Exactly. We had negative views.
People unsubscribed while we were recording this episode because they just knew.
People actively put the episode back into the iTunes store.
Yeah. Why don't you say something horrifically offensive? Put it right at the end of the episode so that people hate listen to it.
Oh, pineapple pizza. So
there we go.
There we go.
Bulbasaur.
Bulbasaur. But you know what? If you would like to find
Solo
us on...
Solo fire first.
Solo did fire first. Are you happy now? Sorry, Greedo.
Han Solo dies at the end.
Sorry.
Dumbledore dies on page 300.
Of Last Jedi? No. You know, if you if you do not want to find this episode on iTunes, it's still there. Too bad.
If you've listened to this episode and you feel like unsubscribing, we don't blame you.
We completely understand that. It won't affect me in this.
Absolutely. And you know what? If you need to hit the unsubscribe button, please go to iTunes now. And please rate and review and subscribe again, because, you know, you want to. And you can... That's how we get super subscriptions. I don't know if that's how the algorithm works. It probably doesn't. But go there and do something. Something is always better than nothing.
Subscribe to us everywhere that you see us.
Everywhere
except
that you see us.
Except there. Do there. Not subscribe there.
And you know who you are, Doug. So if you, know, you are,
I mean, we do have a Douglas that listens to this, possibly.
And you know what? He's going to feel very special that I gave him a shout out. Doug, if you're listening, yes, it was you. I meant you the whole time. You can also find us on Twitter, and I am at Citanium.
I am at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast.
So you can also unfollow us there. And
yeah, just drop us a line and say, we're unfollowing you for this show.
For this episode. It was going really good for the first 5 minutes. Then
when we weren't recording.
When we weren't recording, it was going very well.
I was recording this whole time, 2 hours worth of audio.
Yeah, absolutely. And
ever going to see it.
No.
Because it's audio.
Exactly.
Because it's audio. And yes.
You're gonna listen to it.
Thank you for joining us on ASMR Delve. The way you get the crinkle tinkles in your head. And you know what? If you like the new format of the show, send us a line. We're always interested in getting user feedback.
We're always interested in making you guys happy.
Yeah, exactly. And so if this did not make you happy, just let us know.
Or don't.
And
Keep that thought to yourself.
whatever is in your head right now, do that. I think.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Anyway, everybody, Fatality. I'm sorry.
Kill him.
Yes, that is how we are
going. Finish him.
I'm going to be the Ultra mocap kill. Guy. I'm going to be the mocap guy who didn't have a
pentakill. Sorry, do we got any League fans out there? Quadruple kill.
You know, I am just realizing, Alex, that I think by calling the show Delve, we kind of, doomed ourselves, right?
To hit rock bottom.
We're just digging to rock bottom at this point. Maybe we should have called it, like, Ascend.
Something positive,
like
yeah.
Something positive, like, only can go up from here. Delving up. That's how we are going to rephrase it. This is delving up, because really that's the only direction we can go.
You've delved so deep that you've come out the other side of the planet.
I have dug myself through the planet. And yep. I am on a new continent now. Very happy with that. That's the best way to travel. Dig straight down through the mantle.
I mean, yeah.
It's hard to argue with that logic. It feels like the outro has now, like, There's
segued into a new podcast.
There's a time-space continuum issue that we have, and we are now in a time bubble where gravity is so deep now that we can't get out of it.
Yeah.
So enjoy this lost episode of Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is the Legend of the Lost Delve podcast. And it is as tragic as you might see.
It is unfortunately like being drunk.
It is.
Unfortunately? What's wrong with being drunk?
Ask a glass of water.
They're doing it wrong. They're supposed to be booze.
All right, bye, everybody. I give up.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're back to the ASMR.
This week on the Delve Chat Lounge. This week on the Delve Chat Lounge.
Delve After Hours presents...
erotic reading of...
of the D&D rule book. I hope you enjoy it.
Today we've got the nymph.
Today we have the nymph.
Today, advantage or disadvantage? I don't even know what's going on anymore.
I feel like there's 16 bonus episodes that we recorded today. We have the ASMR. We have, sure, let's play Fatal for the hell of it. We have the, oh my god, sharks.
The weather in England.
Yeah.
You know, if you cut all of these and put them all separately, it would almost be like the other podcast, except us chatting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.